say this is a crucial time for organized labor in the United States. We've had the marches in Washington with thousands protesting outside the state capitol there. You remember the demonstrations in Ohio over collective bargaining, and even the workers, union workers who've come out in support of the Occupy Wall Street protesters make it seem like we're seeing a kind of new battle over organized labor. But it's not a new fight. It's true, labor unions are struggling in some states and their numbers have declined nationwide. But the opening salvo in this fight took place 30 years ago in August of 1981 when thousands of air traffic controllers went on strike.
I must tell those who failed to report for duty this morning, they are in violation of the law, and if they do not report for work within 48 hours, they have forfeited their jobs and will be terminated.
In fact, President Reagan fired more than 11,000 air traffic controllers after the 48 hours were up, and their union was decertified. Joining us now, Joseph McCartin. He has a new book that's called Collision Course. He's a professor of history at Georgetown University. And also with us, Ron Palmer, who participated in the strike back in 1981. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning, Celeste.
Good morning, Celeste. Thanks for having me on the show.
Ron, let me start with you. And the way that this is portrayed in the book and is often portrayed later is that this was a strike that everyone knew at the time had the potential to weaken organized labor. Did you think that back then in 1981?
No, not a bit.
What were your thoughts as you went through? Did you assume that it would just be part of the negotiating tactics?
Yes, we did, but we didn't have an idea that this whole thing was going to come down like it did and cause the cause the turmoil and divide that was between the upper crust and the middle class. We had no idea that was going to happen.
Did you lose your job?
Oh, yeah, I got fired. matter of fact, I have the distinction of having been fired by two different U.S. presidents in less than a year, one Democrat, the other a Republican. And I voted for both of them.
Ron Palmer participated in the strike for air traffic controllers back in 1981. And Joseph McCartin is with us. His new book is called Collision Course. And that collision course is one that you describe incredibly well in the book. That this almost feels, when you're talking about the ticking down of the clock, Joseph, it feels as though you felt it was inevitable, this clash between warring values here. Was it?
Well, I wouldn't say inevitable, but what I would say is that what happened in 1981 had been building for almost 20 years. Controllers had been organizing since the early 60s and demanding some changes and reforms in the way that they did their jobs. And in fact, anger and dissatisfaction was growing by the late 70s. Ron alluded to being fired twice. He actually was fired first in 1980 for, it was alleged, having given a direction to a pilot to direct him into a storm on purpose. And that was shown to be false. He was fired, and then when an investigator looked into it, he was cleared of that charge and rehired, and then went out on strike several months later under Reagan. So the first thing happened under Carter, the second under Reagan. What that showed was that even when Carter was president, there was growing dissatisfaction among controllers who felt that they weren't treated fairly.
Although I'm wondering if this was an opportunity that was given to Ronald Reagan by PATCO, perhaps unwittingly. You describe in this book, Joseph McCartin, that Mike Rock, co-founder of PATCO, one of the labor activists, said just on the eve of this entire event that you can paint the Department of Transportation secretary into a corner, but if you paint the President of the United States into a corner, there's no way he can back down. And that's exactly what happened.
That's what Mike told me, and that's right. And yet the strategy that went into the planning of the strike didn't envision what Ronald Reagan did in the clip that was played earlier. That is that he came out almost immediately, and he threw down the gauntlet. He said you had 48 hours to return to work. At that point, the union had already confronted the possibility that they might be threatened, but they didn't believe that any president would actually fire more than 11,000 folks and try to run the FAA without them. That was something they didn't anticipate, but you're right. I mean, when PATCO did walk out, they did give Reagan that opportunity to basically make this kind of ultimatum And the tragic thing was that it was almost too late for both sides at that moment to change course.
Well, I want to put this question to both of you eventually, but let me start with Joseph. In the book, you describe the dilemma that the AFL-CIO was caught in, whether or not they should support the PATCO strike. And you ask, how far would their members go to support federal workers who earned higher salaries than most of their union members in an illegal strike against a popular president during an economic downturn? I'm wondering, do you think the outcome of this entire event would have been different if the rest of organized labor had presented a united front?
You know, I really don't think probably in the short run that would have made a difference. I think the labor leaders decided that Reagan was in the right legally and he was enjoying popular support for laying down this ultimatum. They made a judgment at that moment that if they, for example, tried to shut down the airports, that they would also suffer.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that they could have changed the outcome of this. However, I would say that labor leaders didn't perceive exactly what Ron said a moment ago, that this would have as long an effect as it did have on their movement.
Well, let me go back to you with that, Ron, then. I mean, your union, PATCO, had supported Reagan in the 80 presidential elections. You yourself voted for them. Do you think that the organized labor at that point, because they didn't see how significant this would be, missed an opportunity to present a united front?
Yes, there was some confusion, too, because I don't think Bob Poli, our president at the time, had laid his plan out specifically with the AFL-CIO. They were kind of caught a little bit unaware of the situation when it first happened. But I will be in disagreement with Joseph on this one thing. Had we had the numbers in June, the horse count came up short. It gave the FAA and the United States government 2 more months. That was invaluable time for them to prepare for what they knew was going to be inevitable. And that was when we went out in August, they were ready for us. Now, if I will also take issue with the fact that if we had labor support, which in some areas we did, we had the machinists, Wimpensinger was helping us out as much as he could, but he didn't tell his people to stop building airplane parts or repairing airplanes because we went out on strike. The pilots certainly were in a disagreement with us. So if we'd have had 2 of those things, even 1 of those things happen, there might have been a different outcome. But I do agree with Joe, and that when the die was cast, and agree with you and what he said in the book, that we couldn't paint Reagan into a corner, and that wasn't what we were trying to do. We were trying to negotiate at the table to get better working conditions for the air traffic controllers. It didn't work.
Ron Palmer participated in the PATCO strike back in 1981, 30 years ago, and Joseph McCartan wrote the book. It's called Collision Course. He's professor of history at Georgetown University. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you. And I just want to say one thing about McCartan's
quickly.
Book. Okay. Collision Course is probably the most comprehensive and well-documented account of this most important turning point
and well-written
in modern
too.
History.
Yeah.
So thanks to those folks there. What do you remember of the PATCO strike, the air traffic controller strike? Joseph McCartan and Ron Palmer had their view. You can reach us at 877-8-MY-TAKE or post a comment to thetakeaway.org. I'm John Hockenberry.
And I'm Celeste Headlee. This is The Takeaway.
The Takeaway is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and the Henry Luce Foundation for Increased Understanding of East and Southeast Asia. Funding for Detroit coverage on The Takeaway is supported in part by the W.K. Kellogg Foundation, WKKF.org. The Takeaway is produced by WNYC and Public Radio International in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Radio Boston.